Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to A Podcast to Be Named Later. I'm Chris Jervis, and I am joined here today with Andy Harris of Outfield Fly Rule and Brent Blackwell of Outfield Fly Rule. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I'm also well.
Good. This is episode number 23. We're actually getting back into this and trying to do it a little bit more regular. And we thought we would invite Andy Harris on this one. He has been contributing incredible material in the form of the written word to outfieldflyworld.com. So now we want to get his input audio as well. He has he's been on podcasts with Dylan Short on the Shell Shot podcast. He's been on Nakahoma Nation several times. And now we actually get our own guy on our own podcast. This is sort of exciting.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, you're only the fourth person to ever be featured on a podcast to be named later. So that's exciting stuff.
Good. Sweet. I'm number four. Woo!
Welcome to the club. Well, it's been a good start to the week for the Atlanta Braves. The big news apparently coming out this past weekend is catchers. The Braves have signed catcher Kurt Suzuki to a one-year, $3.5 million extension that will take care of the backup catcher for 2018. I'm assuming he's going to remain as the backup. I don't see Tyler Flowers going anywhere. So the Braves now have Kurt Suzuki on board for next year, and they hold an option for Tyler Flowers for next year. That basically...
How much is the option?
Tyler Flowers' option next year, I believe, is $4 million.
That's correct.
Correct. Okay. So basically the Braves would, assuming they pick up Tyler Flowers' option, would have their two catchers locked up next year for $7.5 million. And given the production from those two catchers, that's an incredible deal.
Yeah, the Flowers option pickup is about the biggest no-brainer that's going to happen this offseason. And the Suzuki signing, that one-year $3.5 million, was a huge surprise for me. I don't know about you guys, but I assumed that coming off his most productive season, you know, of the last 10 years, that he'd be looking to cash in at least for one more multi-year deal, and probably on the West Coast where his family is. So the comments he made at the signing with him, saying that he believed in the young players here and he believed in what the Braves are doing, I think is not only, great for the Braves, but, you know, is great PR for this rebuild.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I also thought that he might chase a 2-year, $10 million kind of deal. Like, I can understand teams being hesitant after he has the best season of his career at age 33. But at the same time, I thought somebody would give him more than 3.5 and more than 1 year at least. So I think he definitely turned down some money to stay here. So I agree. It's a nice vote of confidence from a player buying into what Atlanta's doing.
Right. I thought that he was probably going to look at he would probably be looking at a 2-year, $8 million kind of deal, you know, maybe a $4 million average annual value. So I don't think I'm too far off of what, you know, he actually signed for, but I'm surprised that the Braves were the ones that went $3.5 million on it. I didn't expect them to do that. It's only 1 year. It's $3.5 million. It's not a huge contract, and it's for a quality backup. I mean, and even he's the kind of guy that if you need him to start for several weeks in a row, he can do that. He's done it before. He knows how to handle a pitching staff. He's put up some good offensive numbers over the last year. Can we expect that to continue? No, probably not. But he's probably better than a David Freitas, which would have been the other option. So I really like the deal. I mean, it surprised me. I didn't expect them to go $3.5 million for Kurt Suzuki. I thought he was going to get more elsewhere, and I didn't expect the Braves to offer what they did. So it works out for both. Everybody's happy in that deal.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, it's also nice just because it gives us positional certainty for 2018 in that we don't have to be looking for a backup catcher in this offseason, and we don't have to carry that unknown into spring training next year as long as both Flowers and Suzuki stay healthy. So that's nice too. I think it's worth we gave him a $2 million raise with this contract compared to what he got for this past season. And I think it's worth it in that regard to just be able to sort of cross catcher off the list of the to-do list for the offseason.
Yeah, I completely agree. It'll be nice not having to go through what seems to have been a perpetual search for the second catcher that we've had to undergo the last several years, basically ever since David Ross left. You know, we were saying last year, well, we can't expect Tyler Flowers to come in and have the same offensive production he had last year. And not only did he have it, he exceeded it. So, you know, is it likely that Kurt Suzuki is going to put up the, you know, one of the best home run per at-bat rates in the majors again? No, but, you know, there's if he's made a legitimate change in the way he approaches and if he keeps hitting the ball out the way he is, there's nothing to say he couldn't approach those offensive numbers.
Right. And for Suzuki, it's also a little bit of certainty for him. While he probably could have gotten a 2-year, $8 or $10 million deal, there's no guarantee of it. And the way that the offseason and free agency has been approaching somewhat one-dimensional players, not that he's one-dimensional. He's, you know, he's good at handling a pitching staff, and he's put up decent contact numbers, I believe, and decent offensive numbers throughout his career. He's not been anything special, but he's been somebody you can plug in and work. But there's some certainty for him as well. You know, he knows he can count on $3.5 million for his job next year, as opposed to going out there and trying to you know, negotiate a deal that's comparable to that. You know, it's a done deal for him as well. So it works out. It's a win-win deal for all parties involved. And Suzuki's been very well liked by the fans. He seems to be a fan favorite based on how, you know, how well he's been coming through in some key situations, and, you know, good for him. It's a good deal all the way around. I'm glad to see the Braves do it. It really surprised me that they did.
And going to what Andy said about his possible change in approach, I think there is actually a sign that that may have happened. I haven't looked closely at Suzuki this year because with every home run, it still seems like this is Kurt Suzuki. This is just unlikely. But the one weird thing that really sticks out to me is that he has been hit by 13 pitches this year, after being hit by 12 pitches over his previous two seasons, which is 237 games over 800 plate appearances. He got hit by 12 pitches. He's been hit by 13 balls this year in 291 plate appearances. And it really makes me wonder if he is doing something differently.
That's a catcher thing, I think, because Tyler Flowers has been hit by quite a few. The Braves' two catchers have been hit by, I believe it was more pitches than all but six teams or something like that. That was what it was earlier in the year when I looked at it. But that's something that's applied to Flowers as well. So I don't know if it's something they are consciously making a decision to try and lean into it. I know Flowers sometimes makes zero attempt to get out of the way. I mean, he's a large man, so maybe it's hard to get the iceberg moving. But it very well may be a change in approach.
It's just one of those stats you don't see spike very much.
But with Flowers, mentioning him, there was an article this weekend from Mark Bradley of the AJC, or I'm sorry, Mark Bowman of MLB.com said he spoke with General Manager John Coppolella, and Coppolella suggested that the Braves were going to pick up Flowers' option. Now, that's probably not a huge piece of news. That's something that is probably, like Andy said, one of the easiest offseason decisions to be made this year. I think the only other ones are picking up Chris Sale's option and declining Jose Bautista's options. Those are probably the same level of certainty. But having Flowers back really should help some of these young pitchers as well. You know, there's some question among some as to how much pitch framing actually matters. Some people think it matters more than others. Some think that the pitcher comes into play on it far more than the catcher does. But the fact is that Tyler Flowers has been among the best pitch framers in the game for the last 2 to 3 years now. He was good before that. He's been at the top of the game for almost 3 years now. And that's something that could help some of these guys like a Sean Newcomb or a Luis Gohara, who tend to nibble around the edges. Having a guy like that back there could really help them out.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Chris. And whether or not, you know, people on the outside believe in pitch framing or not, I think it's very clear that the Atlanta Braves believe in pitch framing. They are willing to go after good pitch framers. And I think, quite frankly, I think maybe the organization got spoiled by Brian McCann being the catcher for so long, and he was so good at that, that they're constantly, you know, kind of chasing that to get that back into the organization. And I can tell you it is certainly an emphasis in the minor leagues. Almost all of the catching prospects in the minor leagues are being tutored heavily in pitch framing.
Pitch framing is also one of those things that it's one of those things that can be taught. it's a skill that can be taught. A lot of the skills that players have, whether it be power hitting or making contact or things like that, some of those are just natural talent. You have to have the reflexes to be able to do it. You have to have the pitch recognition skills to be able to do it. Some of the things that aren't teachable. But pitch framing is something that teams have found is a teachable skill. And if you can get players young enough, early enough in their careers, you can really set them up to have a good, long, successful career that helps not only the player, but it also helps the team as well coming up, especially if you have catchers who are progressing at similar rates as some of the pitchers that they're catching. They develop kind of a symbiosis between them working together and whatnot. So hopefully some of that's starting to happen with the Braves. I'm not sure that we have a catcher right now who maybe Cade Sevik, who is at the same level of some of those pitchers that we expect to see in the next year or two. But it's at least something that the Braves are starting to implement at the lower levels and teach their guys. And a team like Atlanta has to take advantage of every additional opportunity they can. So if they are hamstrung by payroll in certain situations, they can make up for that in other areas by picking up some additional skills elsewhere. And maybe that gives them the extra win or two a year that puts them over the top into a playoff hunt.
I think that it's interesting that that the Braves are teaching it in the minor leagues. So maybe it's the opposite of interesting, because I expect all major league teams should be teaching pitch framing in the minor leagues right now, because I imagine they are, and I think I've even read some things to the extent that suggests that they are. But what's interesting is as baseball, it's going to be funny, because I think pitch framing is going to just sort of like a comet across the sky. It's going to impact the game for maybe a decade at the major league level, and then it may be somewhat gone, because I think what we're going to see the effect of this is going to be that so many teams teach it to the point where all catchers who make it to the majors are going to be pretty good at it. Whereas Tyler Flowers came about in an age when not everybody was completely aware of it, and he is so good by comparison to other catchers. Whereas I think now, down the road, you're going to have so many players being taught how to effectively frame pitches that it may not matter as much when it comes to major league decision making, because there may not be as much of a difference between the best and the worst at the major league level, if that makes sense.
That makes sense to me. Of course, the other alternative is it won't matter, because we'll have robot umpires at some point.
there are... When Flowers came up, it was more of exploiting a market inefficiency. And with so many teams focused on pitch framing now, I mean, even the Minnesota Twins, who were really the last team to embrace it, getting so involved that they signed Jason Castro, one of the best pitch framers in baseball, despite his, let's call it, mediocre at best offense, then that market efficiency no longer exists. There's nothing to exploit there, or at least not as much to exploit as there had been previously. So where some teams have been making up ground because of pitch framing, again, like the Braves, you know, you need to get that extra one win, two wins a year. Now every team is going to be somewhat on the same playing field. There's no excess, no inefficiency to be exploited. So we'll see if that comes to play. I think Brent's kind of onto something there. I think that is how it's kind of going to play out. Until then, you know, every benefit or every advantage you can have, take advantage of it. In addition to Tyler Flowers' option possibly getting picked up, as mentioned by Mark Bowman, in addition to the Kurt Suzuki signing, the Braves have added Tony Sanchez back to the 40-man roster. I don't know if you recall, but Tony Sanchez is the player that the Braves received from the Los Angeles Angels when they sent Brandon Phillips out west just before the playoff deadline. That's kind of an odd move. Tony Sanchez makes the fourth catcher on the Braves roster right now. That is kind of rare. I mean, teams will often carry three catchers into September call-up season just to work with pitchers, just to get extra work, get people some rest. Carrying a fourth catcher is kind of rare. I don't know that I've heard of it, unless that catcher, that fourth catcher, or one of the catchers was a prospect they wanted to get a look at. Is this any kind of indication of something that might be happening in the future? Was Sanchez maybe a Rule 5 protection that they just wanted to go ahead and get on the roster? Clearly, we're not going to be moving Suzuki or Flowers now. I mean, it looks like we're going to keep both of those. Does this portend any other kind of news going on with catchers?
It's a strange one. I'll be honest, I don't know. I believe Sanchez would have been able to be a minor league free agent if he wasn't on the 40-man roster. So it could be protecting. It could be a sign that they aren't enamored of David Freitas for remaining on the 40-man roster or for possibly being a catcher in, for Gwinnett next year. It is possible that they may go all prospects with Gwinnett next year anyway. Cade Savik is already there. It is possible that with a good spring that Alex Jackson could be assigned to AAA Gwinnett for opening day, in which case I'm not sure what it means for either Freitas or Sanchez. And quite frankly, I don't know what their futures for the organization are just in general, because they're, you know, I hate to say it, they're I'm sure they're wonderful humans, but they're catchers that are quite frankly easily found in the open market.
Yeah, he strikes me very much as just the Anthony Recker of the moment, which is just that replacement level catcher, which every team needs a replacement level catcher to hang around AAA. But it's, I don't know, it is strange that he's on the, right. He's been called up to the major league roster.
I think Andy may have hit onto it with the fact that maybe he was capable of selecting free agency if he wasn't on the roster. He may be a guy they want to just get some more eyes on, and by putting him on the 40-man, that allows them to hold on to him for a little bit longer if he's, you know, maybe into one more season. It's not something that moves the needle one way or the other. It's just kind of surprising to see that many catchers on the roster when none of them, by any stretch of the imagination, are a prospect that the team wants to get a look at. But, you know, it's something that, like Brent said, every team needs that catcher, that taxi squad catcher who's bouncing back and forth between, you know, starting at AAA, being a backup in the major leagues. But we'll see how it plays out with the Braves. They did it for a reason. We'll see what that reason is.
Right. And what was really strange about this whole thing is that, of course, he was put on the 40-man when he was traded for, and then designated for assignment or reassigned to Gwinnett. That took him off the 40-man. Presumably, every other team could have acquired him at that point and didn't. They opened up that roster for a mystery reason, and now they refilled it with Tony Sanchez. So my guess is that was, they did this right around the time that Ender Inciarte and Matt Kemp kind of got hurt, kind of in succession. And I suspect they were opening up a spot in case they needed to bring in an outfielder, either Ronald Acuna or, you know, Xavier Avery or somebody from AAA in case they needed another outfielder. They ended up not needing that other outfielder. So
probably far more likely to, man, I make a horrible keyboard GM. Give me a second here. Okay. In addition to the catcher news, Mark Bradley of the AJC wrote a pretty lengthy piece this weekend, or not lengthy. It was more a detailed piece, a lot of information in it, suggesting a bunch of different things. The big takeaway from it, and the big takeaway that's getting all the discussion right now, is that Mark Bradley, in a conversation or multiple conversations, gave the opinion that the Braves seem to be leaning towards bringing back Brian Snitker as manager. Now, Brian Snitker, the team has an option for 2018 on Snitker. There was some discussion several weeks back, or some questions several weeks back, as to whether the team would be bringing him back. And the consensus then, or the thought then, not the consensus then, was that the team was leaning towards bringing him back. Then John Heyman of FanRag Sports decided to weigh in, and he gave his opinion based on people he talked to, which was that the Braves were keeping their managerial options for 2018 open, and that they were considering several other options, some of which were in-house, like Ron Washington or Bo Porter. And that I believe it was Bill Shanks actually wrote an article that said, or Nick Cafardo of the Boston Globe wrote an article that said people he had spoken to said that Bo Porter had the lead among the in-house candidates over Ron Washington. So I guess all that is a bunch of talk about, is Brian Snitker coming back as the manager in 2018? Should he come back as the manager in 2018? And if he shouldn't, why shouldn't he? What has he done? I mean, he really hasn't been given a roster to play with. What could have been expected of him? And if the team is not going to bring him back, who's going to replace him?
Well, I'll yield the floor to Andy on this, because I gave a lot of my thoughts last week when we talked about the managerial situation. I'll quickly respond to, I think he has more or less met expectations in the win-loss column. However, I don't think that him not being given a great roster to win games with doesn't necessarily mean he would win a lot of games with a good roster. So that's the one takeaway. They're not mutually exclusive. Anyway, I'd like to hear what Andy thinks.
Well, Ryan, I don't think that Snicker's performance can be judged on wins and losses alone. And I would hope that Snicker would have been informed of that before the season. I think what you're looking for is the process good? Is his decision-making good? We all knew going into the season this was not going to be a playoff-caliber team, that it would probably struggle to get to 500. But what you wanted to see from the manager, in addition to the things that he apparently is fantastic with, that is engendering loyalty and managing clubhouse and all that stuff, is in-game tactics, making sure that the proper bullpen usage is being done, making sure that that we're using the right pinch hitters and making the right moves in there. And quite frankly, I think there's a lot of room for improvement in those areas. And I assumed that when all this was going on, that eventually we were going to have a new manager for 2018. That said, if they do decide to bring Brian Snicker back, I really hope they go ahead and give him like a 3-year contract, because this 1-year contract with an option, you know, where he's perpetually on the hot seat, that's really not fair to him.
The 1+1 deal, I think, was kind of indicative of what the Braves wanted to do initially. They wanted him to be the interim manager, so they hired him to be the interim manager. In the meantime, he's kind of become a fan favorite, obviously. You know, most fans like him. He's really won over the respect of his players. A lot of players, as a matter of fact, there was an article this weekend that said multiple veterans have gone to the front office in support of Snicker and want him back. Freddie Freeman being the one named because he went on record with it before, but apparently there were other veterans as well who did the same. So Snicker is a guy who, you know, he fosters good loyalty from his players, and that's a good thing to have. If you have guys who are similarly skilled, why not go with the one that the players like? Why not go with the one that the players are familiar with? But I think the team had intentions all along for Snicker to only be a temporary fix. And that was indicated by the contract they gave him. I mean, that the contract they gave him was pretty much just a 1-year deal. I think they had an idea of who they wanted to be the manager. This is just me speculating. I haven't spoken to anybody, don't know anything. But I think they had an idea of who they wanted to be manager. When I say they, meaning probably Hart and Coppolella wanted as their manager. And I think maybe some other influences in the front office may have, possibly even from a bygone era, may have kind of influenced that decision a little bit. Hey, give him another year, see what he can do. I don't know anything about that. Like I said, it's only speculation. But I think it's been clear all along that he was not the first choice for who the Braves see as being their manager. Now, my own personal feeling is I don't think Snicker has really done anything terribly wrong to justify being fired or not getting the deal. I just think he's made some bad decisions, many of which are decisions that other managers would make, you know, especially in regards to lefty-righty matchups. The thing for me, though, is one, it's age. With both Snicker and Washington, they're both over 60 years old. Snicker's 61, Washington's 64, I believe. If you hire one of them, you're probably only going to hire them for 3 or 4 years, and you're going to have to do this again in 4 years anyway. I think it's, if you're looking for stability, and that's why you want to bring Snicker back, is for stability, how much stability are you actually going to get in that regard?
I was going to say, in defense of keeping Snicker for stability, I think stability matters more when you have a lot of younger players, perhaps. Or maybe, I don't know. I'm just speculating here. I've never been in a clubhouse, a Major League Baseball clubhouse. I am merely a keyboard clubhouse speculator. So, but it seems to me that I think that argument, Chris, is easier made for this phase in the Braves rebuild than it would be 4 years down the road. So, like, I don't have as much of an issue with them wanting some stability while Dansby Swanson adjusts to becoming a major leaguer, while Ozzie Albies adjusts to major league life. Because you have a guy who, one of the things Snicker is clearly good at is keeping the players comfortable and making them, you know, feel at home in the clubhouse. And so with so many young players joining the roster over the next couple of years, as we hopefully build a foundation, a core, he could be, you know, despite his tactics, he could be a pretty good, well, I don't know. an acceptable choice as manager.
But here's the thing that I keep coming back to. When does Hart and Coppolella think that this team will contend? And really, not the PR that they've been giving out basically every year, where they're saying, we think that if things go our way, we're, you know, things will go okay, and maybe we can make some noise or whatever. When do we think we will legitimately be able to compete for a division? If it's any time within the next 3 years, they need to find that manager now, and they need to get him in here. I just published a piece on the Chicago Cubs rebuild, and one of the things that I thought was fascinating was that they basically went through to three different managers during the course of a 3 year rebuild. You know, they had Dale Sfim, and then they had Rich Renteria, and then they had Joe Maddon. Rich Renteria was a well-liked manager, well-liked by the players, well-liked by fans, by all accounts did a fine job, but they had the opportunity to get Joe Maddon, and they were not afraid to make the unpopular decision. Now, obviously that's Joe Maddon, and that's, you know, he's a special manager, and there's really not a Joe Maddon out there for us, but the front office there wasn't afraid to push the button and find the guy they thought would be the one to get them to where they needed to be. So if Snitker isn't that guy, they need to make that change now.
I don't think Snitker has done anything to out and out deserve to be fired, but I don't think he's done anything to justify keeping him in the job either. I mean, we started, some people laugh, but we started a spreadsheet to start the year on some of the just awful decisions Snitker made early, most of which involved Emilio Bonifacio, a guy he fought to have on the team. We can't say something about him having a bad roster when he was partially responsible for the roster makeup. One of the things Snitker did, he chose to carry an extra reliever for most of the year, and he did that because he carried guys like Chase d'Arnaud and Emilio Bonifacio and Jace Peterson, guys who could play multiple positions. He felt that versatility gave him more flexibility in substitutions so that he didn't have to carry an extra bench player. He could plug and play those guys as necessary, which allowed him to carry an extra reliever. That's fine. Question that decision all you want. But in doing so, he carried a bunch of subpar players, came out of spring training with a bunch of subpar players, rather than maybe going with a Micah Johnson or a Lane Adams directly out of spring training, who may have been able to contribute a little bit more earlier in the season. I think carrying that extra reliever all year is something that really hamstrung him. And that's a roster decision that Snitker made. That's not a roster decision that the front office saddled him with.
Yeah. And don't forget, everybody loves Johan Camargo now. Johan Camargo did not break camp with the major league team. He could have been that versatile infielder that you were describing. Instead, we got Emilio Bonifacio, despite the fact that Camargo outplayed Bonifacio in spring training. So it's yet another example, in this case, of Snitker kind of going with the veteran at the expense of the young player, which is something that, you know, has also been coming up. And I think you guys discussed it on your last podcast, but it's a little frustrating, especially, you know, for some of us that are ready for the youth movement to kind of take root.
Okay, so if the Braves are going to not bring Snitker back, then who are some of the options that you guys would like to see? I know our friend Tommy Poe published something over at Walk Off Walk today, and one of the names he mentioned was an interesting name that I've heard for a few years as a potential candidate. It was Joey Cora. Brent and I talked about some candidates last year. Clearly, Bo Porter's on the list. Ron Washington, I thought was, you know, if you would ask me 2 months ago, I was about 75% sure Ron Washington was going to be the 2018 opening day manager for the Braves. Now, I'm down to about 55-45. I think maybe Bo Porter probably has the slight lead on that, but I don't know. But one of the guys we also talked about was a Mark DeRosa. Joey Cora, like I said, Walk Off Walk mentioned. Who are some of the guys that Andy Harris would like to consider as a manager for the 2018 Braves if Brian Snitker is not brought back?
Well, if they go outside the organization, I think my My favorite would be Dave Martinez, who's been Joe Maddon's bench coach, first with the Rays and now with the Cubs. Someone who is well-versed in analytical thought and fact-based decisions, I think is due for a shot, and I would love for that shot to be with the Atlanta Braves. And just as an aside, I think it would be great if we could somehow get David Ross as a bench coach as well. I mean, everybody has said from the beginning he seems to be a future manager, even back when he was playing. So if we could get him in the organization somehow.
Well, I don't really have any more good names to add to the list, just because, I mean, anybody I come up with is probably going to be a first-time manager, so it's just guessing at what they might bring to the table. It's not so much me finding a name that I like as much as I would prefer for them to interview numerous candidates and just find someone who has some experience in clubhouses and can probably bring a little bit of what Snitker brought to the clubhouse.
Right. I think you want a guy who's good with players. I mean, the primary job a manager has, at least according to Bobby Cox, was turning the thermostat on to the right temperature every day. You know, you want to make sure that the clubhouse runs smoothly, that everybody's happy in the clubhouse. But you also need to have, you know, game decisions that are rooted in sound thinking. Sometimes with Snitker, I think he got good results from bad decisions. And as Andy mentioned earlier, I want to see sometimes that better decision-making. Will, you know, Terry Pendleton or Eddie Perez or Bo Porter or Ron Washington, any of those guys be better than him at that? I don't know that. But I think at some point the Braves probably should, and especially now with Hart and Coppolella being the brain trust, I think at some point the Braves need to step away from the Schuerholz-Cox era and move forward. That's not to say that there's anything wrong. I love what Schuerholz and Cox did for the Braves. They brought me a world championship. But at the same time, that was 20 years ago, and it's reaching a point now where that type of thinking, that type of baseball, that type of structure is not what the current game is. And on top of that, it breeds loyalty issues. We've seen guys writing about discord in the front office. Whether there's any truth to that, there's no idea. Nobody knows if because they weren't there. But at the same time, if you have guys who are loyal to Bobby Cox and John Schuerholz because of starting their careers with them and the way they were treated over the years, and then you have a current manager or a general manager and president not allowed to make their own baseball decisions or getting undue influence from those guys, I think that gives a poor chance of anything good happening from it. I think the Braves, like Brent said, should interview a bunch of people and find the guy that fits what they're trying to do best. Whether that be a current guy that's in-house or a guy from outside, find the best fit and then go from there. But make sure it's the best fit for the guys who are going to be moving forward, not the guys who have already left the game.
I will say that I hope one of the guys we interview is not Brad Ausmus. I just took a glance at some of Detroit's managerial stats from this year, and they are bottom of the table, 28th in baseball in stolen base success rate. And I believe they are near the top of the table. Let's see where they rank. They rank 8th in the majors in sacrifice bunt rate. They sack bunt in about 65% of opportunities, which is one spot behind the Atlanta Braves this year. So,
yeah, yes. Brad Ausmus was just one I was thinking. I don't have a preference for anyone. I would prefer... I say I don't have a preference for anyone, then follow that up with I prefer. If I did have a preference, it would be someone from outside of the Bobby Cox sphere of influence. It's not that I have any problem with Bobby Cox, but I would like to see the team move forward with someone who isn't going to... I don't know that there's any drama there, but I think John Coppolella, just like people who are saying Brian Snitker should be given a chance with a decent team, I think John Coppolella should be given a chance with the guy of his choosing rather than the guy that the organization chose for him. Otherwise, you know, we're just spinning our wheels and we're going to have to go through this whole process again down the road. As far as Bobby Cox guys go, though, I've always been a fan of Eddie Perez. I've met him a couple of times. I think he's a class act. I would really like to see him get a managerial job or better yet, a front office job somewhere. And I hope that someone gives him that chance.
Chris, I agree, and it's and I'd also like to say that they gave Hart and Coppola the keys to the kingdom as far as running the rebuild. If you don't trust them to make the right managerial choice, or if you are, it's more important to you to get your guy in that role rather than the GM's guy,
right,
then why are they even doing the rebuild?
Here we are, you know, in the last week of the season, and Snitker's option hasn't been picked up yet. I think that in and of itself is a little bit telling by itself. It's one of those things where I think in most cases, I would have to look, but I think in most cases, a manager has known at this point whether he's coming back or not. One of the things that you discussed is, you know, when Chicago made particular moves, when they did certain things. You mentioned the hiring of Joe Maddon.
That's right.
But they also went out and they got John Lester and they went after certain free agents. And that kind of brings up the question of, do the Braves make a move like that? Do they go out and they sign a big free agent, or do they go out and get a big bat? And if so, when's the right time to do that? Are they in that window right now of, hey, we think that we're going to be in this 2 to 3 year window, we need to make our move now? Or is that further along in the process, and right now we're still trying to figure out what we have as the core of everything?
Right. And I think what the Cubs did with the Lester signing was obviously they were filling a gap for a need. Their rebuild focused primarily on hitting, and they went and acquired pitching from elsewhere. We kind of went about it in the opposite direction. I don't think there's necessarily the right way or the wrong way to do that. But the Braves rebuild, I think, for the most part, is over. We've acquired all the guys, all the young talent that we're going to get with core assets. We've got nobody else to trade unless we decide to trade Julio Teheran. That may be the only caveat to this. And that may only be dependent on where we are around the trading deadline next year. So if we're following the Cubs timeline, this would actually be the offseason where we would possibly make a move to get an established veteran in for a place where we feel like we need a veteran. And the obvious places where we would invest in that would be, in my opinion, third base or the bullpen. And I think that Coppy said in his piece with Mark Bradley that they would be looking at bullpen. So that may be where they're going to look. And it may not be a free agent. It may be a trade. But one thing the Cubs also did about this time in their rebuild was they still held on to their prospects. They did not make a big prospect trade until they acquired Aroldis Chapman last season. I think the reason for that is they were still evaluating. They were still trying to figure out, you know, guys like Jorge Soler and Alcantara, who were big prospects that ended up not really working for them. But they had to see that for themselves. They had to see that at the major league level, and then they adjusted accordingly. Next season, I think, is that type of year for the Braves. They have to let the kids play to some degree, see what they have, and then they can adjust accordingly. The difference is what we're going to be looking at mostly is pitchers. We're going to be bringing in starting pitchers and basically having open tryouts. The difference between this wave and the previous pitchers we have is the talent level for these guys are much higher. What we're seeing from the likes of Luis Johara and Sean Newcomb.
Just the eye test says, you know, hey, these guys look like a lot better major league options than Aaron Blair or Matt Wisler did. So I think in some regards, that's good. One of the things I was noticing, you were talking about starting pitching being an option. Also, relief pitching being something the Braves are going to target. You were right in the article, Mark Bradley, Coppola said that the Braves are going to target one and maybe even two relievers to shore up that bullpen. So they're going to do something in that regard. But one of the starting pitching options is probably going to come back around full circle. I read that the Rays are going to put Chris Archer back on the market this offseason. And Archer was a guy that the Braves have really kind of had their sights on. He could be a guy that the Braves might target. He's under control for a couple of years. The problem with that, though, is I think his control ends at the time where the Braves really are kind of exiting the rebuild in full force and going and making playoff runs. At that point, you run the risk of losing him again for the simple. How much are you going to give up to only have him for 1 year, maybe 2 years of that window where you expect to be good? So I question whether targeting him is necessarily a great idea, but we got to do something about this rotation.
Yeah, and I think that may be why you're seeing more noise around Michael Fulmer, who does have more years of control left than Archer does. Right, well, especially he had the UCL nerve thing that he, what do you call it, surgery. He had the surgery for the UCL nerve. Now, that's different from a UCL ligament tear, which is what people think of with the year-long recovery. This isn't an easy procedure, and it'll be interesting to see, how he recovers from it. But by all indications, he should be able to be throwing in spring training. So it could be a case where Detroit takes him into the season and kind of shows that he's sound before making a trade with him. But by all accounts, the Tigers are ready for a full-blown rebuild, and Fulmer is going to be their big card to play. They have to make that trade good.
Let me ask, so in comparing Fulmer to Archer, how many more years of team control does Fulmer have? 5 compared to 4 for Archer? Okay. However, Fulmer does, it's the Fulmer carries cost uncertainty with him, whereas Archer would be, we know he would not be paid more than $11 million. So I think, I don't know. I think I would prefer Archer.
Fulmer would be a free agent after the 2022 season. So, essentially one more year of control, I guess. I agree. There's probably a little bit better track record with Chris Archer than there is with Fulmer. But I think acquisition cost is a big thing to consider as well. The 1 year of control, that's okay. But I think that acquisition cost, our name is going to get him, I think, more than maybe what you would have to give up to get Fulmer and his extra year of control. I'm looking just real quick at the numbers, and nothing about Fulmer really kind of jumps out at me and says, hey, this is a guy we need to give it up for. He is young and he probably is going to get better. But anytime I hear UCL, even if it's a nerve or a ligament, that's gives you a little bit of a pause. If it was Tommy John surgery, those are about 95% successful. They're actually about 97% successful at his age bracket, but it's still a year of lost usage of that player. And, I'd rather have the player. So I don't know who the Braves intend to target, but I know they were heavy after Fulmer earlier in the year from what I remember reading. But they were heavy after Archer, too, so who knows?
And there's a whole league of other pitchers, too.
And with every deal, it all boils down to this. What's the money? What's it going to cost to acquire the player? How much is it going to cost to pay that player? And then what's the opportunity cost or lost opportunity cost for pitching him over, say, Mike Soroka or Colby Allard or one of the other guys who may be coming up in the next year or 2 years? If you go out and sign a starting pitcher or trade for a starting pitcher that's got 3, 4, or 5 years of control, what are you giving up in development, or what are you giving up in potential cheap production from guys like that coming up into our system? These are all things that, we can speculate on, and the team is, teams typically operate 3, 4, 5 years in advance. We're sitting here looking at 2018. I'm pretty sure the team already has an idea of 2018, at least somewhat mapped out, because they're looking down the road to 2021. 2022 already. Most teams operate 3, 4 years in advance. I think they have an idea of people they want to target. The question is, how much are they willing to give up, and is now the right time? Are they going to do it now? Or, as Andy said, is next year going to be probably the better timing for something like that? Because Chris Archer and Michael Fulmer are not the only options. Sonny Gray is still out there. And guys who were traded this offseason, or this past trade deadline, could very well be traded this offseason. A team goes out and gets them for their run and decides, okay, we either made it or we didn't make it. They may decide to go ahead and give up that player and try and get something back for them. So there's a lot of opportunity or a lot of options out there for the Braves if they decide to go that way. The question, I guess, boils down to, timing. And I think I would rather see them wait and see what they have before going out and spending all of that capital, whether it be, cash capital or material capital, in the form of players to get somebody when the window isn't right here. I think I'd like to be closer to that window. And I think, 2019 is probably that closer probably that closer window. Andy, you have a piece you just published. Anything else you have coming up other than the rebuild series that you're doing?
Yes, I should have a piece on Matt Kemp up within the next week or so. We will have more entries into the rebuild series as we get around to it. And then, of course, we have prospects, all your hot stove news and speculation.
You can check out Andy Harris at K26DP on Twitter. You can check out Brent Blackwell on Twitter as well. He's usually posting under OFR Sports at OFR Sports.
You got it.
Am I? You can also check me out at Gervas on Twitter. You can check us out on Facebook. We have a cool little Facebook group where we have a little bit of discussion on Braves topics, talking a little bit of Braves baseball. You can see that group, the Facebook group, Outfield Fly Rule. We also have an Outfield Fly Rule page for news and information. That one gets updated a little bit less often. For a day-to-day discussion, you can go to the group page. You can follow us on at OFR Sports on Twitter. And make sure to check out Dylan Short and the Shell Shocked podcast. He's one of our writers as well and does a pretty good job with the Shell Shocked podcast as well. Feel free to shoot us any emails at outfieldflyrule@gmail.com. Send in your questions, send in your topics. We'll talk about stuff, and sometimes it might even be entertaining. Have a good day, everybody.